Hello and welcome back to the Streaming Heap, your one-stop shop for sci-fi and fantasy on streaming platforms. Wait, that doesn't make any sense.
You almost
had
something.
We're not a streaming service. I almost had something. Your one-stop shop for people who are talking about sci-fi and fantasy on streaming platforms.
Give us a few more weeks. We'll have it ironed.
My name is... welcome, new listeners. Actually, we actually have a lot of influx of new listeners, so maybe I should have practiced that intro a few more times before I started it. My name is Lynn. I'll be your host.
Then they would get the expectation that we're, like, planned.
That voice you hear is my co-host, Eric, the unapologetic geek himself. Eric, say hi.
Hello. That's me.
Our connection is a little bit rough today, and there might be some delays between us. We're going to try and edit it out in post, so bear with us, and hopefully things improve. I say we. Eric is going to edit it out in post. If there's any newcomers, that's weird that you're starting from episode 3 of Silo, but that's what we're going to be covering today. Episode 3 of Silo. And before that, we're going to be talking about, we always have a little session where we talk about what we've been watching, what we've been playing, just, you know, shooting the shit for a little bit before we get into the main topic. Okay, Eric, what have you been doing?
Well, I got the new Zelda game, Tears of the Kingdom, today, this morning, and that's all I've been doing today. I haven't watched anything else over the last week because I've been busy, so that's all I got to talk about is Tears of the Kingdom.
Okay, but you can't say any spoilers, like the internet will have our head for this.
No, I've only been playing it for about 5 hours. Grand total.
Only me. It came out for you today, did it?
yeah this morning. I haven't really gotten that far. Like, I've just gotten through the, I guess you could say, the tutorial section, but like the intro section, because in the original Breath of the Wild, like, you had that grand plateau, you could get that done in like half an hour. This is a lot more involved before it like opens up and allows you to play. Which is fine. Like, there's more story to go through, which I appreciate, because that was my one weakness of Breath of the Wild, in my opinion, is that the story was just kind of blah. There wasn't much to it. There was a lot more to it this time.
Well, they can't get away, because it's a sequel, they can't get away with being like, hey, Link just woke up and don't know where he is.
Although that does kind of happen still.
Link need to stop having so many rages.
But already I'm starting to see like how this game is going to be different. There's an emphasis on like building things, like putting things together, and anything you can think of, like scaffolding or even like little vehicles with wheels. And I don't know, it's interesting. I'm really curious to see how far it goes, because like it seems like it would be almost game breaking how much freedom it would give you. But I don't know. Like I said, I've only just now gotten to the part where it opens up. So I genuinely don't know like how crazy it's going to get.
Legends of the Kingdom, nuts and bolts.
Legends of the Kingdom? What?
Legends of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, nuts and bolts.
Nuts and bolts, right.
So you're liking it?
I'm loving it. I think it's great. And the graphics are even better than Breath of the Wild, which, you know, you should hope. It's been like, what, 5-6 years?
But it's still same hardware, though.
It is the same hardware.
That little Switch is kind of chugging along now, you know?
I think it's pushing it to its absolute limit. Like, the draw distance is insane.
Okay, that's good. Nintendo get away with it because I think they use like a simpler art system that doesn't require so much polygonal.
That's how they get computing. Away. That's how they've always gotten away with it with Zelda, at least. Yeah, and Mario.
Yeah. Well, all right. Oh, I'm not going to ask you any more questions lest we get spoilers. People don't even want to be spoiled about like weapons, features, and stuff. So I'm just
I wasn't
going to
go into
it.
That. But there is one character. I'm not even going to say who it is. But like the voice sounds like kind of like a bargain basement Keanu Reeves. It's really distracting. It sounds like Keanu Reeves, but it sounds like somebody trying to put on a Keanu Reeves accent. It's really bizarre.
Is it Tingle? Did they finally hire Tingle to voice?
Yes, it's Tingle, and he's the most important. This is it pulls like a Metal Gear Solid on you, and you think it's going to be about Link, but you play as Tingle.
I heard Zelda's pregnant with Tingle's baby.
Of course.
I've been saying that whenever people are like, no Zelda spoilers for me. Like, I heard Zelda's pregnant. And they're like, what? Tingle's baby.
One thing I will say is that the previews that I saw, like, I haven't watched the last like month or so of previews. Like, I'm just going by the previews I saw from last year. All of that is pretty much right at the beginning of the game. Like, so the previews aren't spoiling a whole lot. I'm really curious to see what happens.
Okay. Well, I'm excited for you guys. You know, I'm ashamed to admit, I have a Switch. I still haven't played the first one. I was never a Zelda guy.
That's fine. Like, I mean, this is an audio medium. They can't tell, but I am wearing my Zelda shirt. But no, it's fine. If it's not for you, it's not for you. That's totally cool. Like what you like.
I like the like Wind Waker stuff, you know? I don't know. I just don't really do like action platformers, I guess. Well, they're not really platformers, are they? They're just like action RPGs, are they?
Basically.
I never really got into it.
It's just like an adventure game. I wouldn't even really call it an RPG so much.
Yeah, I think it's because most Zelda games are not plot heavy, not story heavy. And I like usually I keep going in a game because of the story.
Otherwise, yeah, Breath of the Wild is like the lightest of all of them in terms of story, except for maybe like the NES games, you know.
Fair. I like the ones that are a bit more story heavy. It's like Wind Waker and stuff.
Now, Wind Waker is great. But yeah. I love Wind Waker. It's one of my favorites, actually.
Let's move on before we give away more details. I've been watching a little bit of Star Wars Vision. I haven't finished it yet. I think I still have two or three episodes left to go. What I've seen, I really like. I was just talking to my friend about this. Like this season of Vision is a bit more diverse than the previous one. Like last time, it was all anime studios. And you know I'm an anime guy, but they all felt very anime. And now here's like a sweet little variety, some claymation, some stop motion. Aardman Studio did one that is just like a feel good story set in Star Wars. It's pretty damn good.
Awesome. I love Aardman. So that's great.
Yeah. I didn't realize how cool it would be to see a Wookiee in an Aardman claymation style, but it was very cool. In the Aardman shot, they also turned Wedge and Dealies into like a Zap Brannigan style figures, and some people are not liking that. But like these aren't canon. Like whatever, it's pretty funny.
Star Wars fans got a Star Wars fan, you know, they got to be angry about something.
Yeah, yeah, and there is an anime one here as well that kind of feels like it's the beginning of an anime series. I feel like with some of these, when the studios are given like a chance to do a Star Wars show, some of them are low-key pitching pilots, because it happened with the first season of Vision as well. The Samurai one, they released the thing, and then I think they released a straight up novel about the continuation of that story with the Sith Samurai guy, and I'm like, well, that's cool, but also the visual style was the coolest thing about that story. I don't know how it will work in a book. And I feel like there's a couple of episodes here I'm like, this is just a backdoor pilot. Like, you're gonna be like, depending on social media and critical reception and audience reception, you're gonna be like, oh, we greenlit a couple of comic books or maybe even an anime series. I don't know. But yeah, like a lot more like willing to go beyond the Jedi Sith dichotomy, you know, some gray like light dark balance explorations, pretty good. And the ships are so cool. I always love the Star Wars ships.
That's one thing I love about animation, is that you can just like have anything. You can create any kind of ship you want. You don't have to worry about building models. You can just design whatever you want, and like the freedom is always apparent.
Yeah. The ships in the Aardman shot is really good. I think that one is called I Am Your Mother.
I might just check that one out, just fun. That one, because man, I love Aardman.
Yeah. Yeah, you should check out all of them. Like they're not all top notch, but they all like all been pretty baseline good. But there is one thing I wanted to talk about though, a late addition to this to our dot points. Have you been seeing all these fucking AI generated like stuff?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I have.
Like those, first of all, there's a bunch of like videos where they like people keep posting me is like, oh, Hollywood is dead. Look what AI can do now. And it is the shittiest thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, it's messed up. And like the fingers never look right. Like people have like 12 fingers and then like the next frame they'll have three. And no. Yeah. And the ideas behind it, like the writing doesn't make any sense because it's not really written. It's just kind of like, mushed together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just vibes. It's not even like stories, and it's not even good or original vibes. Like one of the video is like it just straight up redo the scene of Leonardo DiCaprio like raising his glass from Great Gatsby. I'm like, that's like AI didn't create that. AI copied that. You're just gonna get fucking sued, my friend. And the thing that has been annoying me the most is all these. Created with AI. What if Wes Anderson did Star Wars? What if Wes Anderson did this, all that? It annoys me on multiple levels. First of all, they completely failed to understand Wes Anderson.
Of course.
And how he does stuff and why it works. It's always like, perfectly, they just take away like, oh, Wes Anderson, bright colors, big contrast, symmetrical things. I'm like, yeah, that's a start. And then he's not just representing. Wes Anderson movie isn't just a series of symmetrical shots. Like the thing that annoys me the most is when the Star Wars one, in which like you can immediately flick through the first five and immediately realize you're like, oh, they've missed the point. Because like if Wes Anderson made Star Wars, the Empire would be neat and symmetrical, and the rebels would be the characters that run diagonally across the scenes, and like the one with bandages on their faces, and like it would be like hotel the Grand Budapest Hotel, where the their main characters are always disturbing the
symmetrical and like natures in of Isle the Dogs shot. Too. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and like they can't even get the visual language right. All they do is like, oh, like if somebody dressed quaint. Like, look, if Wes Anderson made this, Luke would look like, you know, like Luke would have a bandaid on his nose. You know, that's the kind of thing going for. Not only that, and it especially annoys me because AI regeneration for this is bullshit. And they chose Wes Anderson because they think like they can just. They can do just vibes, right? They can just do the visual shorthand of what they consider is art. What they consider is art that's appealing to the masses as well as people who are hoity-toity, but they don't really need to put in thoughts into it. They think they can just copy the very distinct visual style. And it's not working at all, because not only they don't get him, it's like the things they are producing are crap.
Well, like, yeah.
There's no story. There's no soul. There's no heart. Anyway, I just want to go. The reason I also bring up this is because the writer strike is happening right now, and this AI stuff and the writer strike is kind of starting to become tied together. And as it would be, right? The strike is partly to react to this, like this idea of AI written scripts and all of that as well. And I think like, you know, newcomers, sorry, we sometimes get political here in this podcast because art and politics cannot be separated. It does feel like a very like far right wing push against like entertainment industry being like they have this view that entertainment like Hollywood elites, right? They think Hollywood is too PC, which is far from truth, yeah. Because yeah. Hollywood is also a business. But they are kind of right in that a lot of creatives tend to be left, right? Because it just
just the nature of the beast, yeah.
Not just the nature of the beast. That's just like how it is. Like people who are people who are left-leaning tends to want to get into more creative jobs, and people who are more creative tends to be end up being more left-leaning.
Yeah, like, it's generally speaking, like, that is true. Yes.
Yeah. Like, we're just talking percentages, right? There's a lot of well-known famous creatives that are right-wing, of course. But this feels like a push against that. Like, this feels like, you know, like, because lately people have been like, oh, you know, Hollywood is being too PC. All these writers are trying to push their agendas. They think AI is the way to fix that. I feel like they think they can't force more right-wing people to become creatives. And if fucking decades of Hallmark movie and those terrible Christian movies and Last Man Standing have proven some of the right-wing creative output even the right-wing people don't like. I feel like there are corners of the internet that they think pushing out this leftist PC creatives and replacing them with AI will finally get them, like, get back control of entertainment and make them not PC again. And I'm really hating seeing this.
No, that's just stupid. Anyway, because, that's my rant. I mean, first of all, it's not even AI. This is just deep learning. Imitation. Yeah. That's all it is. This is not AI. Secondly, because it's just imitation, it's not going to create anything new. It's just going to be recycling old ideas. So, like, if you are upset with the status quo, AI, what they call AI, is not going to actually fix that. It's just going to be more of the same, but less quality. So I don't understand that.
Yeah, 100%. Less quality, more derivative. And more like, it's like trying to inject entropy into creativity. Like, to be like, creativity is a zero-sum game now. It can only deteriorate, which is what a lot of these far-right people think anyway. They think our entertainment is deterioration anyway.
True enough.
anyway, big long rant over basically me saying, quit it with trying to replace creativity with AI, which aren't even real AI, like you said. And where is our fucking utopia promise? We were supposed to replace the menial jobs with robots
so we can focus on
the creative.
Not the other way around,
so we can find joy in that. Not force people to stay in a menial task for no money and make the robots write our entertainment. That's fucking bullshit.
You need to be working more on robots, less on algorithms.
Anyway, I mean, look, it turns out automation, downside of automation is human beings are just cheaper.
Sad but true.
Anyway, on that depressing note, we're gonna wrap up this segment, I think, and hopefully we haven't lost all the new listeners. When we come back, we'll talk more about authoritarianism in the form of Silo episode 3.
Yay, Silo!
We're here to talk about Silo, episode 3. Show's ramping up, Eric.
Yeah, man. I was totally on board with this episode. I freaking loved it. I watched it twice, not just because of this podcast, but because it was so good. Like, I had to watch it again.
Damn good television. Yeah. I was a little bit hangover this morning. So when I was like, oh, I gotta get up and watch Silo before the podcast. And then as soon as I got into it, I was like, oh, when I first started it was like an hour, 5 minutes or something. I'm like, ah, oh, why is it so long? And then it went by so quickly. It didn't feel an hour.
Well, if it's any consolation, Juliet probably felt the same way. She was severely hungover.
This is true. This is true. Like, as soon as the episode began, I'm like, yeah, Julia, me too. Me too, bud. Oh, before we got into it, though, did you see the author of the books listen to our first episode?
Yeah.
I don't know if he's still continue listening, if he's going to continue listening or not. If he is, I'm sorry, and thank you. I'm sorry for that AI rant up, Tom.
My wife did want to say that she read the first book before it was like even widely published, like when you were giving it away for free on Kindle or whatever. That's when she first read it. So she read it a long time ago. So she just wanted to say that.
Oh, okay. So
if you're listening, Hugh.
Yeah. Did you...
I told her. Yeah.
Did you show her the comment? Yeah.
I did.
So yeah. For listeners, Hugh Howey, the author of the Wool series. Did they call it the Dust series or the Wool series? I know the first book is called Wool.
Yeah, the first book is called Wool. I think it's called the Dust. I think it's called the Silo series. I'm not 100%. Sorry, Hugh. I don't know.
But it's very popular books, and he's a very celebrated author now, but he's still pretty down to earth and is active in a lot of like fan communities, and he posted in the Silo subreddit, and I said, hey, love the show, we're doing a podcast on it, I'm gonna read the books after the show, and that your wife was a big fan, and he replied and he said, oh, I listened to the first episode. I liked it. So, and hooray. He responded to my theory. He said he liked it about the tattoos. If you want to hear more about it, go check out the first episode. If you somehow skip straight to episode 3, I guess. But enough patting ourselves in the back and celebrating a great author. Let's go into this episode. Before we get into it, as usual, storyteller Lynn is going to recap the events of this episode.
Speaking of stellar writers, go, Lynn.
I was fishing for that. So, in this episode, Julia desperately needs therapy. She decided that lowering herself into the largest body of water she have ever seen in her life without any plan was a bad idea. And she decided to get drunk instead, which is a better idea.
Lynn doesn't mean that sarcastically either. He really does mean that.
While she spiraled out of control, so does the generator. And she thinks they ought to shut it down and fix it before it all goes to shit. Mayor Jean and the deputy go on a walkabout to shake babies and kiss hands, as well as check out Juliet, who has been named by Holston?
Holston.
I wrote Houston, but that can't be his name. Holston.
Blame
by Holston as his successor. During this, they do some old people flirting, which is gross. After meeting Juliet, seeing that she has unaddressed trauma, anger issues, assault co-workers, and have a hero complex, Mia Jean decided that she's pretty much already a cop. She just needs a badge. And shit like this, I'll make sure Hugh Howey never retweet our podcast.
That's good, Lynn. I like that.
While initially reluctant, after finding a not-so-hidden message from the former sheriff, she made a deal that she'll take the job if they let her shut down and fix the generator. What followed was damn good television of what is essentially a few people doing manual labor. So she nearly drowned, but she didn't. Of course, this is episode 3, and she is the main character. So she gets the job, and she goes upside. Oh, by the way, the mayor get killed. The end.
Yeah. Honestly, like, if you just go by the plot, this feels like it should be just a filler episode. But again, I want to stress, a filler episode, just being a filler episode doesn't mean it's bad. And for the most part, it is moving some pieces around for the next episode. But the basic problem of this episode is a self-contained episodic problem, like, of the generator. But that doesn't mean it's bad. It means it's actually really, really well done, really well handled.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and we're using filler in a sense that the internet used filler, which is incorrect way of doing it anyway, right. Because this is world building. Like, world building needs to be done, especially in TV shows, you know.
Especially this early on. Yeah.
Yeah. The point of a long form narrative like this is to be able to do things like this, you know? Like, it's not like a movie where they just have to touch on the big plots. And honestly, this is what I asked for in the last two episodes. I thought the last two episodes moved too quickly. But what I'm realizing is I think the last two episodes was mostly dealing with the short story that lead into the first novel. I think that's what's happening. Like, I didn't look into it because I don't want to find out anything about the books to color my reception of the show until after I finish the season one. And if people say season one maps to book one, then I'll read book one. From what I'm like, what I'm feeling through the, you know, zeitgeist, I think there was a short story. Like, Silo started as a short story. I think the short story itself is called Silo.
Oh, okay.
And then it became a book. And I believe, like, the thing with Holston's wife, I think that is, I think, don't quote me on it, neither of us has read the books. I think that's a short story. That's why it felt a little bit rushed, I think.
I didn't even know any of that. So that's interesting.
And also probably why we didn't meet our main character until, like, halfway through episode two. And yeah, this is what I was looking for. I was like, oh, they need to slow down. They need to world build a little, you know? They need to show us how it all works. And they do here. It's pretty good. Pretty good. I like the mayor. Sorry to see her go. So you want to go through this episode scene by scene first?
Yeah, that's pretty much how I laid it out in the notes, just because I couldn't think of any other way to break it down.
We both didn't like the cliffhanger of the last episode because we're like, what's the plan? I don't know if I said this on this podcast before or not, but whenever somebody make a stupid decision in the face of something like really overwhelming, it just remind me of that scene from Modern Family where Phil Dunphy and his family is like having a picnic and their car is rolling forward into going to roll down the hill like off a cliff. And he jumped on the hood, and his wife just screamed, "What's the plan, Phil?" And that's the voice in my head every time I see a stupid plan. And that's what I felt like Juliet when the cliffhanger happened. What's the plan, Juliet? What are you gonna, like, yeah, you have a rope, you lower yourself into the water. You don't even know what swimming is. Not only you can't swim, you don't even know what swimming is.
Yeah, I don't know what she was thinking, honestly. And I do think it's hysterical that, like, at the very beginning of this episode, she's just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to climb back up. It's like, yeah, what was the point of that then?
The smartest thing she's ever done. And also, at the end of the episode, she's like, I couldn't do what George wanted me to do. I'm like, I don't think he wanted you to lower yourself into a giant pool of water with a rope, Juliet.
I don't know. He had so many breadcrumbs. He probably had like a certain breadcrumb that she didn't even notice that led to like a boat or something.
Yeah. He's just like a fucking quest giving NPC in a MMORPG. Julia, bring me 8 wolf pelts and fashion it into a boat. And Julia's like, what's a wolf? All jokes aside, though, the way it was shot about like her trauma of her fear, like a very primal fear of water. When you like, I joke, but it's quite literally, she has not seen that much water, you know?
No, and like the fear on her face down there was very palpable. Yeah.
Mm. And the editing and the score, really good, really good. It really captured that sense of panic. Like, it's captured the panic attack, which Hangover Lynn did not need that at 8 o'clock this morning, let me tell you.
I will also say that montage of her drinking, which it looked like she was just drinking grain alcohol or something, but whatever it was, that montage was so well put together that I could kind of smell it and feel it, you know? Like, I understood that very viscerally, especially when she like takes a big swig and she puts the bottle down and then she like puts her hand up like, no more bottle, no more. Like, I know that feeling. I've been there.
Yeah, but they always come crawling back.
They always go back. Yeah.
And kudos to the writers and the directors for not trying to make depression and downward spiral sexy.
Yeah,
Hollywood tends to do that. Like Hollywood tends to do that all the time, especially when it's a woman trying to going through a hard time. I'm looking at you, Queen's Gambit. Depression is not in sexy underwear dancing around to a record player, okay? Depression is this. Depression is your friend saying, like, it smells like you threw up everywhere.
You threw up in the hallway, you threw up inside, you smell like vomit.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Like, I feel like, yeah, like the whole thing where she's like, you're not a drinker. Not well.
She's like, let's change the subject. And her friend's like, oh, you don't want to talk about vomit? You don't want to talk about throwing up?
Yeah. It's a good, like, they really capture the friendship, you know? Like, she's, like, clearly concerned, but she's not here to, like moralize and do an intervention. She's like, hey, are you 2 hours late for work? Hard punching that dude, not great.
Yeah, I like that Juliet is really not a good person. Like, she's very broken, like, but she's still, like, relatable and understandable, but she's not, like, she's not very well put together, is she?
No. Like, and we learn more and more about her as we learn more and more about her. We're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But for like the first 10, 15 minutes of this episode, I was like, Juliet, come on, man. Like, pull up. Get out of this tailspin. Big up, stupid. Mayor, and his name is Mons, is it?
Yeah, Deputy Marnes. Yeah.
Mons.
Such a weird name.
Hey, Mons.
So Mayor Johns and Deputy Marnes. Yeah.
Yeah. They start going down the spiral staircase and they stop in front of judicial.
Yeah, they stop in front of judicial, but they don't go in, right? And apparently, this was going to piss off the judge, who is a her, and we have yet to meet this judge person. But it seems like...
Yeah.
Judge Meadows. We were talking in the last episode how we thought that there was going to be some other figurehead, probably from judicial. Yeah. I think now we know who it is. It's this judge person.
Yep. I don't like those judicial bastards. They're too clean.
Yeah.
Anyone who live in a dystopian society and is so clean is somebody who can't be trusted. Yeah, so we go back to Juliet. She goes through the engine. Who is her baby? You know, like, she's...
Nobody goes
That's
in there but me.
Unhealthy attachment. Yeah. You know, like when somebody is somebody's life is spiraling out of control, they attach themselves to something. Job, their kids, their friends, alcohol. This is hers. She loved that engine like she loved a baby or that breadcrumb leaving computer man. Assault Cooper. She got reprimanded. And I do like they... The actress is very good. The writing is very good because she just punched a coworker. But the writing team and her portrayal immediately win us back when she's like very sheepishly quietly. She's like, can't you just make him punch me back?
I did love that line. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Julia, we can't stay mad at you for long. As far as I'm concerned, you can punch anybody.
In fact, there are some people I would like you to punch.
Yeah. Commons, for example.
Looking at you, Common. Yeah. I don't care if you have a daughter.
How'd you make giving strawberries so
menacing?
Sinister. Yeah. So the generator thing, they've been setting it out for a little while. And, you know, I like it. Like, I feel like they really thought a lot about that set. And like they really built it. Surely they didn't build that massive set, like clearly functional set, for just this two episode, right? There has to be more to do with the generator and stuff down there, right?
Oh, probably. Like, they did a lot of work on it, so it would be hard to believe that it would be just for basically this episode and a little bit of the last one.
Yeah. This is why this is not a filler episode. This is very vital. Because they spent a lot of money on props for it. They aren't just talking in hallways. Although it is starting to show that in this show, they constructed like four floors on the side lately. And every once in a while, every time somebody stops somewhere, I'm like, this is just the same place from the second episode.
As somebody who watches a lot of Star Trek, I'm very forgiving of that sort of thing.
Yeah, me too. It's just funny. Like, I like sometimes for new listeners, sometimes we nitpick, like, we don't really hate it. Like, you'll be able to tell when we really hate something and we're like ripping it apart. Sometimes we
I'll usually be drinking by that point. Yeah,
it's enjoyable to deconstruct things you're enjoying, okay?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't mean we think it's bad. It doesn't mean we want you to think it's bad either.
One other thing I wanted to point out about Judicial when they're walking down, it's the only part of the Panopticon where the walls are there. Like, you can't really see inside Judicial from the staircase. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I noticed that. I'm glad you did too. This whole Panopticon experiment. Rules for thee, not for me. I'm looking forward to meeting this Judge Meadows. Okay, so they visit Bernard, Tim Robbins, bribe him with bourbon?
I think it's brandy. Yeah. And he's all like, yeah, this is great, but you can't like bribe me with this and expect me to just turn a blind eye to what you're doing. Yeah, he's still like kind of an asshole.
He is.
Yeah.
And also, like, yeah, she's not asking you to turn a blind eye. She's asking you to back her in her choice with the power she has. You guys are the one trying to like muscle in on her, you know?
Right, exactly.
This is a little bit separation of power, isn't it? Division of power, you know, like judicial, legislative, enforcement, that kind of thing.
Sort of.
It's not legislative, but
yeah,
like,
it's not clearly a one-to-one, but yeah.
Yeah. But the mayor and the sheriff's office is clearly just public facing and like clearly figurehead, right?
They have less power than both Bernard and definitely than judicial, yeah.
Not just less power, no knowledge, right? Like, whatever conspiracy is happening there, they're clearly not in on it. But and then I didn't realize that mayor was elected. Like, there was nothing to suggest that they were until this episode.
Everybody's like, "Well, I'll vote for you."
Yeah, now it makes sense, right? Because the part of part of control, part of authoritarianism, you still need to make people believe that they have some power, they have some choice. If you don't, if people are truly cornered, then they revolt. So now I understand the system a lot more. I think whatever Bernard, Tim Robbins' character is in charge of and judicial, they clearly has conspiracy going. And they're letting the people believe they are choosing their leaders in the form of the mayor. That's why the mayor doesn't know anything, because she's not in on the conspiracy because she's voted in. But now, by the end of the episode, when they think they can't control her anymore, they kill her.
Yep.
And of course, we'll get to that later. The great irony is she was about to retire.
Yeah, but it didn't matter.
But they didn't know because it wasn't public knowledge.
I don't know. I think they probably still knew. I mean, we get lots of hints throughout this episode that they're like basically hearing every part of her conversation with everybody. So
yeah, but I feel like I don't know. Like, I feel like if there's any way that they might not be able to listen in, it's probably like that office. And also, I think the idea is like they are spies, not necessarily all recording devices. You know, I just think the tech wouldn't be like. If you're planting bugs everywhere, it'll be like falling apart and you'll need to be like constantly replacing them.
I also think that when she first like admitted that she was even thinking about retiring was when she was on the balcony with the deputy and the lights were off, like, so there was no power.
Yep.
So if there were any kind of listening devices, they weren't powered at that point.
True. We also see the mids. We've seen the highs, we've seen the lows, now we've seen the mids. The mids are pretty mid.
Nothing really that remarkable. Except Jorah Mormont.
That was a surprise. He's still a dick.
Yeah, basically.
Mr. Friendzone Incel over here from Game of Thrones.
He was a dick in those Resident Evil movies too. He was like Dr. Isaacs, I think. Yeah.
I don't remember the Resident Evil movies, dude. I only remember the first one, the only good one.
They're terrible. I love them. I was never able to get through the like last two. Like that, that's when it finally got too bad, even for me.
I love so bad that I enjoy movies. Resident Evil never got into them.
Fair enough.
Okay, so what else happened in the middle? Oh yeah, so Jorah Mormont, we get a lot more world building, a lot more character building for Juliet, right? Like we already know from last episode that her mother and her brother committed suicide like a year apart. Meeting Jorah Mormont and like his clear he clearly doesn't care about his daughter, doesn't want to reach out, and he's like super defensive about it. I'm like, I get it.
Yeah.
I get why Juliet is the way she is. But also at the same time, I think we start getting into the metaphor of this episode as well. This episode is just called The Machine, right?
Right.
And it's about like the central of the plot is about that generator, the machine falling apart, like the thing that has to function every day because it is vital, right? It's vital to survival. That's what it need to do. It need to function every day, and a little stress chip away and chip away and chip away, and then there's like sometimes you can't just keep doing maintenance, right? Sometimes you need downtime, and I feel like that's also the thing that is coming through here with people. Like that's what Juliet needs. Juliet's car, she's spiraling. Things are chipping away at her. She's spiraling out of control, you know. And she needs a downtime. She needs something different. Like that's how the people are in this closed system. Like because they all having to do things to survive. And the same thing with the doctor. He said, like, he didn't say days off. Like they clearly don't have a weekend. He said, "Oh, my day off." They get a day, and we're not even sure if that's like 6 days and one day. It could be a day a month.
Right.
Like, yeah, he's a dick, but what he does say makes sense. He's like, I can't walk all the way down the stairs and back up in one day. I need that day to rest. Like, that makes sense. These people are just on the run, on the edge, like stretched so thin. No wonder people are committing suicide. No wonder they're making it a sin and a crime against the silent to commit suicide, right? And once again, somebody also asked in the silo subreddit, and we said it last episode as well, why no elevators? Well, this is why, right? This is literally why. It's a part of control,
right?
You know, they're keeping people separate. They're making it harder for people to organize. They're making it harder for people to keep in touch, you know? Like, that's why porters are running up and down there all the time, you know? Also, like, they're keeping people busy, you know?
And tired, yeah.
And tired, yes. That's also why, even though clearly resources are limited, there's alcohol. You always have to give people alcohol if you want to keep them docile. The Egyptians knew about it. Keep them tired, keep them drunk, and there will not be a slave uprising.
They can tolerate a lot, but if you try to take away their alcohol, they'll revolt.
Yep. And also, we learn about the literal heights also being literal class structure as well, right?
Right.
They straight up said it's very unusual and strange for somebody who was born to a doctor in the mid to go down to the lows and become an engineer. So
yeah, they did. It did make it more clear that there's not a lot of mobility here, either upwards or downwards.
Yeah, literally and metaphorically. Okay, so now we get to the scene where Common offer strawberries very threateningly, but before that it's Mons talking about people fucking.
like over there were these two naked people fucking, and the next day they were over there fucking.
Nice moves, Mom. You know what, I didn't realize there was a romantic connection until like the lights went down later and they're talking on the balcony. And that scene, I'm like, are they gonna go back to where, like, he talked about that fucking story and fuck? Is that what's happening? Because, like,
while I think that's kind of what the writing is doing, is it's like, it's priming you to think sex, and then there are these two old people, so everybody's gonna vomit at the same time.
Yeah. Especially because you said priming.
Yes.
yes. And then Common offers strawberries. I don't think those strawberries are poisoned.
No, they weren't.
Especially because he eats it later.
It was just a power play. That's all it was. It was a very minor power play, too.
Well, I think that's when they learned that Mayor John is not going to be easily placated, easily controlled, you know?
Right, just like testing the waters.
Easily threatened. Yeah. Okay, so, and then... I'm going through my notes and reading it go through the plot. And here Eric wrote, engine start breaking just in time for Mayor to witness Juliet feeling it.
She's doing
but
that, like,
that was a little bit sexual.
Yeah, it was very sexual. It was like this, like, she's like the horse whisperer, but she's like the engine whisperer. You know, she's got her like whole horse body whisperer. Up against it. And she's like, shh, shh, like, I've got to listen.
It's like that scene from Jurassic Park where the doctor listened to the tummy of the Triceratops.
Oh, yeah. Very similar to that, yes.
Have you seen the edit of that where
with
they
Jeff
put
Goldblum?
In giant Jeff Goldblum breathing?
I love that so much. Like...
but yeah, like, I thought that, like, I get that she's, you know, she is supposed to be like this wonder engineer, but her, I thought that thing was a little bit much.
It was a little over the top. But yeah, I mean, I know what it was going for, and it makes sense, but at the same time, it is really over the top. And it also kind of bothered me just the coincidental timing of the mayor showing up just in time to witness all this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, especially because it's that one set of steps of stairs leading to that thing. So that was, which part was this? This is just where she goes in and she just fixes it, right? And then the mayor go meet Martha. They are clearly old friends. We don't know what she said about Juliet to the mayor. I don't think we'll ever learn it. I think this is just better in our head, right?
Yeah, I think so too. Especially now that the mayor is pretty much dead.
Yeah, I think she's dead. That's a lot of
probably blood. Dead. Yes.
Yeah, that's a lot of internal bleeding.
I would probably be upset if she's not dead, because it's just looked too graphic. Too much.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
I
mean, look, the human body is capable of losing a lot of blood and still live.
Yeah.
But from fictional visual shorthand, she looked like she should be dying.
But you find out that not only were they friends, not only were Martha and the mayor friends, but that Martha 25 years ago was in a relationship with somebody named Carol. And
Carla.
Or whatever. Carla. Okay.
Yeah.
My theory is that Carla is Juliet's mom.
Oh, okay. But Juliet's mom committed suicide. I suppose there could be a timeline in between, you know?
Yeah, there's time in there.
You're thinking they're having an affair?
Yeah, I think maybe I do. But like the relationship between Martha and Juliet almost feels familial. It feels like she's like an aunt or something. And they never really make it clear what their relationship is. But I think if Carol is actually her mom, all the like pieces fit together. They like had a falling out. They broke up. And for
There's
whatever
no Carol.
Reason,
it's Carla.
Carla, whatever. Sorry. Then Carla, you know, commits suicide after that. And, you know, so the only person that Juliet can go to in that point, because obviously her father is distant and her brother also commits suicide, so she goes to Martha. It makes sense to me.
I have I don't mind your theory, but I think I have a different theory.
That's fair. Yeah.
I think
more theories.
I think we'll meet Carla.
Mm-hmm.
I think Carla could be Judge Meadows. We don't know her last name.
Ooh,
it could be
that's
Carla
also good.
Meadows.
I like that too. That's a good one. Either one, I will take either one. Either one's good. You can't name drop somebody like that and not have it be an important character, at least.
I think Judge Meadow is Carla Meadows. And even if she isn't, I think we're going to meet Carla. I don't think Carla's dead. Because they clearly established that Martha is agoraphobic. That's the fear of leaving the house.
Yeah, agoraphobic.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't. Agoraphobic. And she hasn't left the place in like 25 years. Well, the mayor just died. I think she's also clearly paranoid enough about things that she's always listening on the radio and stuff. I think she's going to leave to investigate. And then we'll probably see a reunion with Carla.
Maybe. I mean, that's possible. Sure. We definitely haven't seen The Last of Martha. Nope. God, no. So, yeah.
No. No. Why'd you say that name? Martha!
I hadn't even thought of that.
Okay, so she got offered the job. And no, thank you. Like, she didn't even need to think about it, right? Like, because I guess she lived in a lifestyle where she have never considered another job. She always knew that her answer would be no, because she need to take care of the generator, right?
Right, right.
I like the way she says it, even though it does make her sound really cocky. She's like, everybody in the silo think their job is the most important job in the silo, but mine's actually is.
I laugh and I'm at like, that.
Yeah.
It makes sense. She's right, but it also is a funny
she's
one.
She's right.
Yeah.
She's right, but also that shouldn't be. That's dangerous, my man. Mm. That's why you have a shadow. That's why you need to really teach that shadow stuff instead of punching him in the face.
Apparently, she's also a shadow. She's the shadow of the guy, the boss. Because he says that at some point. He's like, you're supposed to be my shadow. Yeah. Yeah. So, like, that's how kind of their system works. It's kind of like a weird, everybody has an apprentice kind of system.
Yeah. Like Jedi's.
Right.
Except more sex.
But about as broken.
Less broken than the Jedi. I think. at least they serve a function. So she rejected the job, you know, like your typical rejecting the call, of course.
She's good at that.
It didn't last long. It literally lasts a scene.
Right.
I do like that scene though, where they all like they no longer just like rankings and different jobs. They just friends in a room discussing this new awesome thing that happened to one of their friends. You know, it's like, you got off a sheriff. You will make a good sheriff. I really do like the line. You don't need to kiss her ass, Cooper. She's not gonna punch you.
No, and like I was saying in the last episode, I do like that down in the bottom, they don't really stand on ceremony too much. And they do have that like blue collar attitude of like, they're all friends. They're not just like coworkers. They don't care about the power structure outside of work. That kind of thing. Yeah, that camaraderie works really well.
Yeah. And they... oddly supportive of her. They said you would make a good sheriff. I don't think so. she's so goddamn volatile.
She'd be a terrible sheriff, honestly.
She would not pass the mandatory psych test. By the way, this silo need therapists, okay?
Lots and lots of therapists.
But you and me discussed, we couldn't help ourselves. We try not to talk about the episode before we start the podcast, but we actually briefly talk about this because we thought it was hilarious. This line is real bad, where the guy's like, oh, there's something. Etched into the back. Like, what's this etched?
What is this etched into the back of the badge?
And then they didn't show it to us for a while. So I was like, oh, it's probably something cryptic that only Juliet would understand.
Right, that's the way it's the way it's like framed and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. The end of the episode, we discover that it just says truth. My dude, can you not read? Why wouldn't you just say
it's not even dull or anything? It's like in giant letters on the back of this badge.
Yeah.
If you saw that, your instinct would not be to say, what is this etching? It would be, why does it say truth here? That's what you would say.
I know sometimes in fiction you have to come up with a little bit of contrivance to create tension and stuff, especially in the writing of the dialogue. But I think you're gonna do a little better than this.
I don't think this was the writing's fault. Like, yeah, the word truth is
maybe
a little
you think
too
it's a delivery?
Weak. I think it's the prop department's fault. I think it should be something a lot harder to read and harder to see. That's all.
Okay, well,
it could still be truth, but like make it a little bit cryptic. It could be better than just the word truth, but like I don't know, I do feel like the prop department dropped the ball.
I think it's also a little bit of writing as well, because if they wanted to not reveal it until they like not reveal what it is, if they don't want the guy to say it, all they have to say is, oh, why is this etched here?
Right,
like he didn't have to say it out loud. It's because he said what
is this
weird. He's like, what's this?
What are these strange symbols? Maybe he just can't read. I mean, he's a cop.
I can't read. have you seen that Yu-Gi-Oh dub? Like somebody dramatically draw a card and it's like, I can't read. Oh, yeah, I can't read. I'm the card. That's what this reminds me of. Okay, so now Juliet makes the deal. And I think that's good. Like, I feel like I don't understand why just seeing the word truth convinced her that she needs to take the job. I think there is a little bit of a logic loop leap there, but I'm willing to go with it, right? Like,
I don't disagree. I do think it's a little thin, but I do think I understand what they were going for, that she would need that little extra push, that little knowledge that the sheriff was doing this for a very good reason, like to get at the thing that he promised her, because at this point she thinks he's betrayed her. But then, you know, she would see something in the badge that would make her think, okay, maybe I should do this. And then then when she starts thinking about that, it clicks that she can make this deal and fix the generator.
I just think being told he chose her as his successor should already be enough indication that he is giving her a signal that he wants her to take the job for a reason for the reasons they discussed.
Yeah, but I mean, like, this was just dropped in her lap and she's hungover. Give her some credit. Give her some time.
True. She still smell like vomit and engine grease. Firefly has long since conditioned me to like girls in overalls and covered in grease. This is why I'm always asking out people who work at Pizza Hut.
Man, I've worked in a pizza place. That smell is awful. It does not go away.
I'm joking, in case you or the audience don't know. So this plan, this good. Like it also, I think she just jumped too quickly, because this is a healthy decision that she decided on, but like, everything leading up to this, she has not been in a healthy place. So I just thought she jumped to a very healthy decision too quickly, because she's like, okay, no, I can't stay attached to the generator, but I do have to, like I do have to fix it, so you know, like other people can actually just maintain it.
I think she, you know, she had the time crunch because the mayor was leaving, you know, and apparently they don't really have phones.
Well, yeah, she also have the. They have computers, but not phones. What are the computers for? Just counting down your fuck year, I guess. Fiction use a little prop to explain complicated concept, it's always hit or miss. Like, there's always a risk. I like this one. This one went well. Like, I really liked it. Oh, this is how it's supposed to work. And then she clipped a thing, and then it's like, now it's wobbly. I'm like, okay, that's a good visual metaphor. I like it. But the part that does make me laugh is she's like, eventually it's just going to stop. I'm like, yeah, the first time it will just stop too. That's just the laws of thermodynamics. Even if you didn't clip into that top, it is going to stop, I assure you. But this is what we're talking about, right? In closed systems, entropy will get into it, the system at some point, and that's what's happening to this generator.
Absolutely, yeah. Just takes a little tiny deviation, initial condition, and something's gonna go wrong.
Yeah, because they're like, oh, this makes me really laugh, because they're like, we'll open it up and we'll just have to quickly find out what's wrong. But as soon as they open it up, it just sparks. Guys, I think I see what's wrong. And then when they stopped it, one of the blade is like just
it's like bent 90 degrees twice, you know. Yeah. It's like a lightning bolt.
It looked like Harry Potter's scarf.
I do like that whole scene where they explain what they have to do and why they have to do it. They actually get it across very well, very easily. And it's very natural that in this situation, they would have to explain it to everybody, because not everybody knows how everything works. And yep. it's kind of like that scene in a heist yep. movie where they explain the heist to come. Yes. Like they explain what's about to happen. Yeah. I thought it was really, really well done.
Yeah. And like the characters and the writing do a lot of heavy lifting, because if you really drill down to it, what they're talking about is real fucking boring. But then,
yeah, they're just replacing a fan. Yeah, a rotor fan.
Yeah.
That's all they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, like I like it. I like everything about it. I understand this is part of her character arc this episode, like learning to delegate, you know, learning to know that she can't take care of everything. She doesn't need to be an island. And then her choosing Cooper, like knowing that she need to teach him, like, and knowing that she can't just think only she is good enough.
Are you sure she should not have chosen
Cooper for this job?
Because like she delegates to Cooper because she thinks she's the only person who can go down and spray a hose on the steam vent, because she thinks
no. Even before that, choosing Cooper to come with her.
Remember? See what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 And no, I think that is also what she learned once she chose to go do the fan blade thing, because she still picked the dangerous job for herself, but she learned that she has to delegate. She can't be two places at once, you know?
Right.
But here's my thing. She chose wrong, because Cooper's little and nearly got her killed. She should have chosen a much stronger man. I'm sorry, Cooper.
Because yeah, Cooper could barely
you're too
lift
tiny
that
for
fucking
that family. You should have brought like one of the many big men in that room. Cooper is the tiniest man in that room.
Like just one of those dudes that was like fixing the fan blade could have like gone up with the fan blade and done it.
Yeah. I do find it funny that the fan blade is plugged in there like it's a USB port.
It's very strange. I don't know much about giant generators, but I'm pretty sure it's more secure than that.
Yeah. I half expected him to like turn the blade around and put it in. But once again, like even though the climax of this episode is somebody trying to plug in something, the tension and the writing and the character, the actors really sell it. It was good. It was good TV.
The tension was through the roof. I mean, they did everything right to like build that tension. Even when they cut away to show like the cops outside trying to make sure everybody stays in their rooms, even that didn't completely cut the tension, because even in that scene there's something weird happens, like that old man is like on the stairs and he's like help me, and you're thinking to yourself, what is this guy, why is he doing this, is this like some kind of setup for something? So like
yeah,
the tension is not completely
yeah.
gone, the tension is yeah. still there. So I appreciate that. And I don't know, there's just so many things that this whole sequence does well.
Yeah.
Like the bit with the pressure gauge, the way it jumps back and forth, and then, you know, it starts moving to a certain way. And then you realize all these different parts are out, and they would have to go back in order to just start it back up again. And the gauge is already like reaching 250.
Just two guys hammering away.
And just like constantly that one guy's like, we're almost done. One more minute. You know, it's the tension, the way it builds is so good. So good. Mm.
This has been a good year for hammers in entertainment. Because the Mandalorian with the armorer and the guy from Andor with the
oh,
hammer
yeah,
and the bell.
I forgot about that guy. Yeah.
Now that we're done completely praising this scene, as we should, it's a great scene, great setup, great writing. Julia should be dead.
She should
make
totally
sense
be
that she's
fucking dead.
She doesn't make sense that she is in that thing, and like her eardrum hasn't burst, and like she should be like broiled alive. If the pressure is enough that pipes are bursting and literal like rivets are being launched with pressure, she should be dead.
She's spraying water onto a piece of metal that is glowing red hot. She should be like covered in third degree steam burns from that. Like there's no surviving that.
Yeah.
Just standing in that little tiny chamber with that would be enough to burn your skin.
Yeah. Well, but what we don't know is this isn't our Earth, and these human beings are biogenetically engineered and they're much hardier than human stock.
Shut up.
You're just afraid that it might turn out to be ancient aliens.
But I did like that the writers were able to come up with a way for her to face her fear that she expressed at the very beginning of the episode, the fear of drowning. And here she is basically drowning. I thought that was clever. Yeah. That's some clever writing to get her to that place.
Yeah. Did she learn to swim? Did she learn to swim?
No, she what was going to drown, man.
Because at the end.
I think it's just that the water was
climbed
high
up.
Enough.
She climbed up.
I think she was just barely able to reach up and get out. She didn't necessarily have to know how to swim.
I thought the big triumphant reveal is going to be like the camera is going to go forward and then look down and she's just like doggy paddling. Just treading water. This is why they don't make me. They don't let me make movies. Hugh, if you are listening, if it turned out to be ancient aliens, you're gonna get a couple of angry tweets.
See, actually, they're aliens, and this is Earth like 2 million years ago. It's that kind of story. It's Battlestar Galactica.
No. They have past dispensers, okay? You cannot force me to believe like past dispensers are like the logical technological nexus. Like every society will create past dispensers with a little fin duck on it.
Oh, that's really funny.
You wrote here Sims and his daughter. That was his son. I'm pretty sure he said son.
Was that a boy? I thought it was a girl. Whatever.
I can't. Don't. Yeah, well, I'll have to rewatch it. I don't remember properly. But yeah, I don't know. Like, are they trying to humanize him already? I mean, he hasn't done anything.
He hasn't. Yeah, like he's had like two scenes so far. One where he broke up a fight and another where he offers strawberries to the mayor. I mean, there's not enough there to humanize yet.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to this old people being in love stuff. Ugh, I don't approve.
It makes perfect sense, but it's gross. I don't want to see that. I don't want to see these old people kissing. Their liver spots are touching.
We're kidding. It was sweet.
It was very sweet. Like, I actually like it.
We're mostly kidding. We're mostly. But yeah, it was quite sweet. But yeah,
but as soon as she starts saying that she's gonna open
she's
up,
she's not talking about retirement. Yeah,
one of them is definitely gonna die. Instantly, all the flags are there.
Yeah, how does money work in this silo? Because they're like, I thought this was like a communist system. Surely there has to be like a socialism thing in place, right? They're not letting people like starve and die in the silo.
No, but I mean, they've shown money. They showed a little like
surely there has to be like they talk about money here as well, but surely there has to be like universal basic income kind of concept, right?
Sure, why not?
Like, they can't like, and they're clearly assigning people to jobs as well, like, because the way they talk about it is that they like, oh, we might have a potential different placement for your daughter and stuff, you know. And the way they said, oh, a daughter of a doctor going out and becoming an engineer in the Lowe's, that's unusual. Like, but at the same time, they still have concept of money. It's also like, so I'm considering like, yeah, they get placement, they get given jobs and stuff, right? But there is some mobility, some wiggle room, and there's also a concept of like disposable income on top of your basic needs that you have to earn.
Yeah, I think it's just your basic centrally planned government that happens to have a little bit of a capitalist economics on top of it. But like any centrally planned economy, it's collapsing. So yeah, it makes sense to me.
All right. But your don't tread on me shirt away. Did I tell you when I was in Boston, they were selling those snake don't tread on me flags in the what do you call it, the city hall, in the city hall. I'm like, does anybody not realize the fucking irony of this being sold in a government building? Government heritage building?
Man, I live in the Midwest, and there's like trucks out here with like the Punisher bumper sticker next to a Back the Blue bumper sticker next to the Gadsden flag. It's people don't know what the hell they believe in out here.
It just reminded me of the scene from Forgetting Sarah Marshall where Sarah Marshall yells at what's his face character, the guy that we all hate now. What's his name? Russell Brand's character about tattoos. Like, these are conflicting ideologies you have put yourself. It doesn't make you worldly. It makes you an idiot. That's what it reminds me of. Anyway, we're getting off topic. This is the part where that made me laugh. Like, oh, you only have like 3 floors, because they show the mayor's come back up the floors and then it's outside of Bernard's office again. And he just runs out. And I'm like, what have you been doing? Have you been just staring?
I was very confused about the geometry of where they were at any given moment, because like they leave the lower area, they leave mechanical, and then the next time you see them, they're on a balcony, but it's dark, so you have no idea where they are. In my brain, they had already gone all the way up to the top somehow, but apparently they were still in the lows at that point. And then all of a sudden, magically, they're with Bernard again. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right, though. They either have cameras or they have a really good spy network, because Burnett's know everything.
Yeah, he totally knows something that only talked about amongst themselves. I don't remember what it was, but there was definitely something that he knew that he shouldn't have known. I think it was about the deal. He knew the deal. Yeah.
Like, why did they shut off the things for 8 hours? Yada, yada, yada. And then, of course, the ending scene. Christ, the mayor dies. Right. Who did it?
Judicial, clearly. Obviously, judicial did it. It's just a matter of how. seems like poisoning, but where? Like, how did she get poisoned?
I think these people already have shit implanted in them. Like, I think the whole population is rigged up Suicide Squad style. Like they already all a woman of age already clearly willingly subject themselves to implementation of a foreign medical device in the form of the birth control pill. Like, I imagine there are other measures in place where they're like, oh, this is for your thing. This is for your insulin, whatever, you know.
Could that be what killed the sheriff and his wife up top? Like, if they did, in fact, die. Instead of some poison or something, like maybe like the implant was triggered and they die.
Yeah, maybe. But if you freeze frame the flesh, screen fail, there's no bodies.
That's true. I freeze framed it and looked myself. Got all up in my TV.
Let's just talk about that right now, I guess. The glitch. People clearly noticed that, right?
Somebody had to have seen it. Like, I think a bunch of people probably noticed it, and I think it's going to be a major plot point. Because it's all part of the revolution, and people are going to want to go open the door again, you know?
Yeah. I don't like the glitch. It doesn't make any sense. Because that's not a window with a filter on it. That's clearly a TV screen. When electricity goes off, why would it first take away whatever technological filter they are applying for a split second, but keep the actual view outside, and then the view will go out? That layered going out of the... because of electricity going out, that doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. I kind of buy it just from the weird shit that happens to computers as they're shutting down. I don't know. I think it's fine. I'm willing to suspend my disbelief for it.
Why pipe in? Why a filter at all? Why not just a still image? Like that's the part that doesn't make sense. Yes, I understand you might have to apply the filter when people have to go clean, but that happens like every 2 decades, every few years or so. Like in the beginning of the show, they like nobody has cleaned in like 14 years. Why would you have the filter running the whole set time? Just have a still image you send somebody to go clean.
It can't be a still waste image, but it could be a loop. But like the clouds are always moving, and it always goes, it cycles from day to night and all that. So like, I mean, it can't just be a still image. There has to be motion involved. True.
But all I'm saying
but
is,
but you're right. It doesn't necessarily need to be a filter going on at all times. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I still don't like that the filter go off first and then the normal viewport go off later, a split second later.
You're allowed to have your hangups, but I'm totally fine with it.
This stinks of EMP going off in Fast and Furious and all the gates going down. I'm like, why would you do that? Why would that be part of the system?
Yeah, if you can't even accept it in a Fast and the Furious movie, it's your problem. Yeah.
But yeah, that clearly is going to lead to more plot points, you know, like the woman there clearly saw it. We don't know how many people saw. Also, like we've only seen that one canteen. They said there's 10,000 people in there. How many other different canteens are there? Is this supposed to be identical canteens in multiple floors?
Well, yeah, I mean,
different viewports, or is there only one place?
No, we've seen multiple before. Like we saw one upstairs when the sheriff's wife was going crazy.
Yeah.
And then we also saw the one at the very bottom when the sheriff went out to die.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. Okay, yeah. True.
I mean, it's the same set, but
but they shift the chairs around.
Yeah.
Yeah, this brutalist architecture where everything looked the same, convenient for set creation, but confusing sometimes. Also, Man said he's gonna like draw pictures and sell them off. What? Like, you haven't seen anything in your life except all these walls. What are you drawing?
Yeah, the only thing we've seen him drawing is other people. Like, he draws people. But like, true, you could be a caricature artist, I guess, but not really caricatures, they're just portraits.
I don't think anybody in this desolated place is buying art, is all I'm saying.
Well, they're starved for art, so they'll take whatever they can get, I guess. True. I don't think it's a viable business, but whatever, okay. It was just a pipe dream.
Well, here's my question. Will he be the next mayor? We have a new sheriff.
Yeah, and we're going to have a new mayor. What they're going to do is they're going to install that one guy that they wanted for the sheriff as the mayor. Like, it's going to be somebody in judicial pocket.
Yes, but clearly they have dog and pony show elections happening, right? Even if they installed that guy temporarily, there have to be another election because they clearly do make dog and pony show of electing mayors.
Right.
So, Mons is gonna want to get to the bottom of this poisoning his
He's not gonna just walk away from this. No way.
Would he run for it?
Maybe.
He was present on the mayor's shake babies and kiss hands campaign.
Right.
He was there. He have some residual political
coattails
acumen because of it. Yeah, so I wonder if he'll run. I wonder if he'll become the mayor and she the sheriff. I think it's more likely that she'll be the sheriff and the guy who they wanted to be the sheriff is now the mayor wanting to be the sheriff and they're going to clash and she's going to punch another coworker again.
She's definitely punching people. Yeah, that's a given.
But it's okay. She's done nothing wrong. She's just punching people and she's like, hey, I'm the cutest. I've done nothing wrong. We know and we love you. Okay, so who is Martha? I think we talked about that. Why does the mayor think Juliet will be a good sheriff? I don't know. She's punching people. I mean, the previous guy wasn't also a good sheriff. I don't think there is any good sheriffs in this show.
It is possible that she was thinking that thing we were talking about in the previous episode where, like, she could be a bridge between the lower and the upper and kind of, like, cool the rebellion before it starts.
Jorah Mormont is going to be very surprised when his estranged daughter is now the sheriff of 10,000 people.
I wonder if she's going to stop and see him or if she's just going to walk all the way up to the top. I mean, she's just going to go all the way to the top, right?
Yeah, it's just going to go all the way to the top. Nothing about her screams like emotionally available. The one guy she seemed to have been emotionally available for took a swan dive and then is now dead. So
right.
I think that door is closed at least for a while. I lost my train of thought. What was I going to say? God. So yeah, next episode, she become mayor and she'll find out. Well, so she becomes sheriff. She'll find out that mayor's dead. Yada, 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 right? Like, we don't really know where this is going at the moment. We don't know what he hid in that vent. We don't know why specifically he left the note to double the flowers. That was important.
Right, that was a big deal.
Did you see that?
I did see that, and I've been thinking about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't know what's on that digital camera that she gave to Martha.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, what is on that? That's new. Like, he didn't have that before. He didn't have that before the time skip, like the computer guy.
Right.
It seems like that's something that led him to what he's looking for.
The door, yeah.
What is he looking for?
Yeah. It's the door. It's that tunnel.
Yeah. And also they while they were planning that to fix the generator, they're like, steam come out of this pipe. We don't know where it come from.
You should probably figure that out. That seems important.
Check it out.
It's like powering everything.
If whatever producing that steam runs out, you guys are screwed. But I think it's the geothermal energy, right? It's like a geothermal vent.
I would assume so, yeah. But it would have to be from really deep down because the water underneath the generator is not, you know, boiling hot. So I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yes, this is true. So, well, so many mysteries, so little time. I feel like they delay what's the outside mystery for, like, what's the conspiracy mystery currently, right? Who killed the mayor? Yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
I'm fine with it. I still feel like the idea of what's on the outside is a season-long, if not longer, kind of mystery. And they've got to find something else to get us going. Yeah.
I'm fine with it being season long. I don't want it to be like, I don't want this season to end with us knowing at least a little bit more, like maybe a bit more definitively whether or not the outside is irradiated or not. Like it clearly isn't. I think I'm leaning on the side of like, it isn't.
No, I don't think it is either. But
because the glitch shows that.
Yeah. The glitch shows that it is that, and it's not like a third thing. But my theory for how the season is going to end is that they're going to find the door, and it's really more of like a hatch, and then they're going to open it, and then they're going to like look down this big tunnel, and then it's going to go down into the tunnel, and you're going to see it.
I hate this. I know what you're doing.
It's going to cut to black. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's doing a Lost bit for people who... Lost is really old. The people who listen to podcasts are the demographic. They don't remember Lost anymore.
Damn it, Lost started.
We only
podcasts.
Remember the pain. This is true. Lost really started internet discourse over fiction. Like that.
You
that was
children
Lost.
Need to learn where you came from. Get in touch with your roots. Watch the first
also,
four or five seasons of Lost. You can skip the rest.
The beginning of the downfall for Lost also started with the writer's strike.
That's true.
Just saying.
Yeah. That was like the really bad part of Lost. That wonderful third season and that episode about the tattoos. Yeah.
A lot of shows are going on hiatus right now because of the strike, and as they should. Did you see Imagine Dragons showed up to perform like an acoustic live show for the strike?
That's awesome.
One of the articles jokingly said, Imagine Dragon tried to break strike with their music. I don't even hate Imagine Dragon, but that's a funny, funny headline. Okay, so do we have any other burning theories before next episode?
Honestly, no. I'm kind of floored with where we are now. I don't really know what to expect from the next couple episodes. I'm excited. I was cautiously optimistic after the first two episodes, and this episode really like notched it up a little bit more. I'm really excited now. So
sweet. Excellent. Me too. All right. Well, then I guess that's it for this episode of The Streaming Heap and this episode of The Silo. If you want to leave us a good, nice 5-star review, leave us a review on any of the podcast platform of your choice, especially if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, because it really helps us with discoverability. And of course, if you have your friends listening to if you have friends watching Silo, maybe, you know, recommend us to them. And if you have any questions, criticism, hate mail, love mail, whatever, you can send us email at thestreamingheap@outlook.com. That's thestreamingheap@outlook.com. Until next time, I have been Lynn. This has been The Streaming Heap.
I have been Eric, and life is but a stream.
Goodbye.
Okay, I gotta go back to Tears of the Kingdom now. Play more Zelda.
Okay. Okay. 5 went to Japan, and my mom and my aunt went to Japan.
Yeah.
And I asked them to bring me back one of those jacket with the, like, those hand embroidered Japanese jackets, you know, that are popular.
Yeah.
That kind of look like a Letterman jacket, but like, it's like hand embroidered. I'm like, I wanted one with a dragon on it. That's what I said. What they heard was, buy me everything that has dragons on it.
Oh, you're like dragons. Okay.
Yeah, that's essentially what happened. So they brought me back that jacket, which is really nice and a cool one. Have like a tiger and a dragon fighting on it. And they brought me 2 shirts with golden dragons on it, very colorful golden dragons on it. They bought me a pants with dragons on them. They brought me socks with dragons on them. Now I can actually wear an entire outfit made with clothing with dragons on them. I just need to buy a shoe with dragons on them, and that, I'll have the whole set. What is that? Is that fidget spinner? What are you?
Yeah, my son like started going to a new dentist, and like, you know, they give you that bag full of like a toothbrush and toothpaste and shit like
that.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
They now put like a fidget toy in each one. So somehow it winds up on my desk. Okay. All these fidget toys wind up on my desk.
Somehow. Okay.